State of Washington Court of Appeals, Division 1, is now in session. The Honorable Judge Spearman presiding.
Be seated, everyone.
Good morning.
Our first matter, State of Washington versus Eric Walker. Party's ready to go forward?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Mark Mestel. I represent Eric Walker on this appeal, and I was one of his defense attorneys at trial. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time.
Very well.
There were 6 shootings in Snohomish County over the space of approximately 3 hours between the late evening hours of June 1st and the early morning hours of June 2nd. In one of these shooting locations, Molly Conley was struck by a bullet and was killed. There was approximately a 4-week investigation which resulted in the arrest of Eric Walker and the prosecution of him for a number of crimes, including a number of counts of assault in the first degree while armed with a firearm, a number of drive-by shootings, and the first-degree murder for the death of Ms. Conley. The state's case against Mr. Walker was entirely circumstantial and rested primarily on forensic testimony, or testimony from forensic scientists, concerning trace evidence found at the Marysville shooting on 56th Avenue Northeast, the last of the 6 shootings, and the ballistics testimony from Brian Smeltzer, a criminalist with the Washington State Patrol Crime Lab. Mr. Walker had entered not guilty pleas. He went to trial. He presented witnesses who, if believed, would have made it impossible for him to have been present at several of these locations. The jury found him guilty of the first-degree assaults, the drive-by shootings, did not reach a verdict on the first-degree murder, but convicted him of the first-degree manslaughter. Judge Wynn imposed a sentence of approximately 91 years in prison, and it's from that judgment and sentence that we appeal. I have raised 5 separate assignments of error in my pleadings. I'd like to address 3 of them and submit the other 2 on the record. The first assignment of error I'd like to discuss has to do with the limitation placed on the cross-examination of Brian Smeltzer. As I said, there were 2 forensic scientists who testified. One was Mr. Van Wyck, who testified to the trace evidence associated with a collision between a moving car and a parked car outside the 56th Avenue Northeast address. That testimony, if believed, put Mr. Walker's car on that street. However, nobody observed any shots being fired from that car, and the only eyewitness to the collision described a different car than one that would fit Mr. Walker's car. So my belief is that the strongest testimony that the state had to do with the identification of the firearms that were seized from Mr. Walker's residence as having been the firearms that fired the bullets that were recovered from all of the shooting locations other than the Conley shooting, where there was no trace evidence found. Mr. Smeltzer was introduced to the jury by the state as a criminalist who has worked for the Washington State Patrol Crime Lab, whose duties included the examination of biological fluid for DNA testing, and then his experience in testing ballistics. When we sought to cross-examine Mr. Smeltzer on mistakes he had made as a criminalist that had been documented through cross-contamination of DNA samples, the judge refused to allow us to do that.
No, the cross-contamination, that was in 2001, was it not?
I believe it was in 2004. I know the state asserts it was in 2001. When I reviewed the pleadings before coming here, the footnote says that Exhibit 426, which is the offer of proof, was from 2004. Now, it may have been a 2004 article that related to an earlier incident. But they were following up on the state's introduction of his qualifications as somebody who had done DNA work. And we believe that the...
Was there any other limitation on the cross-examination of Mr. Smeltzer?
Other than mistakes he had made? I think we started off by saying, have you made mistakes?
The mistake in 2001.
What?
That's the only issue that you weren't allowed to cross-examine on.
That's correct. Right. And it became significant, at least from my perspective, Your Honor, because the state, through earlier criminalists, had indicated that the Washington State Patrol somewhat assures the accuracy of its results by having other scientists review the work, that there's peer review. In Mr. Smeltz's case, the state did not introduce any peer review. So here is a situation where you're dealing with more of an art than a science. He's looking at microscopic examinations of markings on bullets, some from a known firearm, some from an unknown firearm, and giving his opinion as to whether they are consistent or different. So it is his credibility, which is essentially the entire case. The inability to show the...
Did you point out the lack of peer review since they had testified that that was their protocol?
As much as I could, Your Honor. Mm. I did. We believe that having the jury hear that there are mistakes that were done at the crime lab, specifically by Mr. Smeltzer, following up on the state thinking that this was important enough to present to the jury that he was experienced in DNA analysis, prevented my client from meaningful confrontation with Mr. Smeltzer and denied him a fair trial. As I said, this was the cornerstone of the state's case. If the jury didn't believe that Smeltzer was correct in identifying the two weapons seized from Mr. Walker, then the state's case had very little substance to it. The second issue has to do with the what I call the photo reenactments introduced in conjunction with testimony elicited from Detective Wells that regarded the Conley shooting. While the state certainly has the right to present demonstrative evidence, the rules require that the exhibits be based on substantially similar facts to that established at trial. In this case, we have a number of teenage females walking down a dark rural road when a shot is fired unexpectedly and Ms. Conley is hit and dies from the wound. There is no one who can say that the shot necessarily came from the car. There's conflicting evidence that it came from a car.
Is your position that this is the equivalent of a reenactment? Is that?
Yes. Okay. It is my position that it is.
And in your mind, is there a distinction between how we would look at the admissibility of a reenactment versus something that's admitted for purposes of demonstrating a witness's testimony?
Well, but my first concern is the admissibility of Detective Wells' opinion. The state came up with the theory, which was the only theory they could, that if they were going to tie Walker to this case using all the other shootings basically as 404B evidence, that they needed to be able to show that it was feasible that this shot could have originated from a car through this type of gun, struck Ms. Connolly, and killed her. Right. That was their theory. Right. We believe it was objectionable and improper for Detective Wells to be able to testify that it was even feasible that this could have happened.
The state's not permitted to prove its theory of the case or offer its evidence that would support its theory?
Sure, but not through the opinion evidence of someone on this type of speculative evidence. There was no qualification that would allow this officer to testify and no accepted scientific theory that said just because it's possible that a trajectory could have originated like this, that you can give your opinion that this is what happened. So they...
You want to use your time?
I want to talk for another 30 seconds, then I'll use the remainder.
I'll save you 1 minute then.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
And so the state comes up with a theory, and then they present this graphic image taken in the daylight of an officer holding a long-barreled gun pointed at a model who represents Ms. Conley. And we believe the emotional impact of that, where there is nothing that is substantially similar to the facts that were introduced, was error. And finally, Your Honor, the Miranda issue.
You're working into your last minute here.
All right. We believe the Miranda issue is based on the fact that the police, one, should not be able to continue to question someone when they say, well, is there an attorney present? And secondly, because these interrogations are psychologically coercive, the police should not be able to extract a waiver on the premise that we're not going to tell you why we arrested you at gunpoint and took you to this interrogation room unless you're willing to waive your rights.
Is there a case
case law from Washington that supports that argument, though?
Not yet, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Fair enough. Thank you. I think you used up. I'll give you 30 seconds.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Good morning. I'm Janice Albert. I represent the state of Washington, the respondent in this matter. On the first issue raised by counsel of whether the defendant was denied a meaningful cross-examination, the court did not abuse its discretion when it limited the defense's ability to question Mr. Smeltzer, the forensic scientist, about a mistake he had made, and it was in 2001. The article was 2004. As an offer of proof, defense presented a document, I think it was a newspaper article, that said that Mr. Smeltzer had cross-contaminated a sample in one case that resulted in, was tested three different times, and so there was cross-examination in that one case. This was not a DNA case. This was a case about ballistics testing, and that's all. There was no DNA requested. There was no DNA testing done. Although defense attempted to have Mr. Smeltzer say that DNA was the gold standard, he was unwilling to do that. And the case rested on the court's decision that this, which the court called ancient history, when the dangers of cross-contamination weren't known, was absolutely of such minimal relevance that a trip down this bunny trail would be confuse the issues and be a waste of time. So the court acted well within its discretion when it made that decision. The court also did not abuse its discretion when it let in photographs taken in order to prove, to show to the jury that the trajectory of the bullet was possible in the homicide that occurred in this case. The court let that testimony in to show one thing, to let the state illustrate one thing, that a person sitting in a car, just like the defendant, in fact the defendant's car, holding a gun out the passenger window, could in fact have held the gun at the right angle so that a bullet from that gun would have gone through the victim's neck on one side and come out higher on the other side. That was the sole purpose of the testimony. I'm not sure I addressed in my brief the issue that defense counsel highlighted in its reply brief, was whether the detective should have been permitted to testify about this at all. And for the same reasons, of course, he should have been. He did not give any opinion as an expert other than this trajectory is possible under these circumstances. In fact, his opinion was, and I'll quote, the green laser light fit within the parameters of Mr. Walker's vehicle and this configuration we had set up, essentially lining it up with Detective Lewis's shoulder. Detective Lewis was the person who was in the car when the shot was fired. There was no abuse of discretion. This was not a reenactment. In terms of Miranda,
And what was the basis for the detective's opinion?
The basis for his opinion was the information that he had, the dimensions of the car, the victim's height, the place of the entrance wound and the exit wound, based on what the girls who were observing her at the time said was her position on the side of the road as they walked toward the traffic.
Was that part of the foundation that the jury heard as
yes.
to the opinion?
Yes. On the Miranda issue.
How did they did you handle the other variables, the weight of the driver in the seat, the proximity of the vehicle to the white line and the girls? I mean, there are so many factors that it feels like a reenactment to me.
There are many factors that could have weighed into this, and that's why the judge was so careful when he gave that limiting instruction, which was drafted before the jury heard about the reenactment and saw the photographs, and was given to them then and then later at the end of the trial, that the circumstances might not be exactly the same. It goes to weight, not credibility, and that they were sufficiently similar or substantially similar to what was going on the night that this homicide occurred.
So do you concede it's a reenactment?
It's not. I'm sorry, did I say reenactment? I didn't mean
yes.
it. It's a demonstration. It is not a reenactment. It does not purport to be a dark car on a dark night holding a gun out of a window and shooting at a group of girls. It is offered for one thing. And these are very unemotional photographs. I think I submitted them to you. I designated them in the clerk's papers. They are as unemotional and neutral as they could possibly be under the circumstances of what they're going to show. On the Miranda issue, the defendant was arrested and taken to the police station. He was not told why he was under arrest, and Detective Pence read him his Miranda rights. After he read the rights, the defendant said, "Is there a lawyer here?" At best, that is an equivocal request for a lawyer. Detective Pence took a step he didn't have to take, and he said, "No, but I can get you one. It will take a little while." All true. No trickery. The defendant at that point said he wanted to waive his rights to a lawyer. He asked what the case was about. The detective never said, "I won't tell you until you waive your right." The detective said, and the court found in finding of fact number 8, "I will tell you after you decide about your rights." That's a very different statement, and that's in the finding of facts, which is unchallenged. The detective never made a promise to the defendant. He never tricked him into waiving his rights. After the first waiver was given, the rights were read again, and there was another waiver that was done on the tape of the defendant's conversation. You have a transcript of that. So the rights were given a second time, and the defendant waived his rights again. If you have no questions about those issues, I'll rest on my brief for the rest. And thank you for your attention. I'm asking you to affirm all the convictions.
Thank you.
Your Honors, there was a limiting instruction as part of the concern about the effect of these photographs. I ask you to look at the photograph and come to your own judgment about whether this is emotional or not emotional to have a long-barreled revolver pointed at a person. For really no reason. They could not establish any of the facts that are contained in this photograph. All they could establish is this Ms. Conley had been shot and killed. They couldn't establish her position. The medical examiner said he could not establish her position. They could not establish the caliber of the weapon. They could not establish the type of weapon, the barrel length of the weapon, whether it came from that car, another car, or from across the street. The court should not allow the prosecutors to have a theory of the case and then simply say, well, it's possible, and here is a photograph to show you how it would have looked if you accept our theory. It simply denied my client his right to a fair trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much.